morning, everybody, and welcome to another brand new episode of Mornings with the Outlaw as we walk into a new dawn for this show. Now, I apologize right off the bat if I sound a little echoey. We had a bit of a carpet issue here over the weekend. Let's just say I fell asleep playing video games, knocked over this thing, it fell on top of some stout beer I had, and it spilled all over the carpet. So we're getting the carpet cleaned. That's my life. Welcome to my life. But I am so excited. I am the Outlaw John Roca. I am so excited to welcome to the show permanently going forward as my special guest. You know her from the Action Army. You know her from Schmo Bates. You know her from getting it into with Brandon Hannah on Twitter and social media. But today she is here to talk about so many topics in the world of entertainment. And I'm incredibly happy that she has agreed to come on the show permanently. That is Alex Shashak. How are you, Alex?
I am stellar. Thank you so much for the warm welcome. I appreciate it.
Of course. How was your weekend? I'm sure you didn't spill beer on your white carpet. What did you do this weekend?
I really can't confirm anything regarding spilling beer. Although, me being me, chances are it's more White Claw, if anything. But I do. St. Louis is beer country, that's for sure. So we definitely love our brews here in St. Louis. But yeah, it was a fun time. Doing a lot of training and movie watching. So
training? Well, are you going to play? What do you mean training? Are you playing in the Shmoda?
No, I'm in the fan leagues. I am a manager and just for funsies. And I try to watch like a new movie every other day. And they have categories I need to study. Like one of them has to understand a lot of the movie trivia behind the like the 30s and 40s Thin Man franchise.
Oh yeah, Myrna Loy and forget the guy's name. Yeah.
Between Nick and Nora, the detective stories that, and there's like they had to get a lot of trivia down for like James Brooks movies. James Brooks directed movies.
Right.
And so I'm like watching some of these movies just to help them out and being able to write down questions for them.
That's the life, ladies and gentlemen. That's the life. Yeah. We're dedicated to it. That is the life. Interesting stuff. All right. Well, we're here to talk about so many things and get into some Timothy Olyphant, The Mandalorian, some Stargirl debuting, some Scoob numbers. We've also got some casting news and a Percy Jackson sighting possibly on Disney Plus. We're going to talk about all of that today. But let's say hello to everybody who's roaming around in here. Haskell420, MK Songbird, Andrew G, Larry Leese. What's going on? Philip Butler, Ben Rayner, Ronnie Padilla. Good morning, Sean Barato, Keith Hoffa, Marquise Harrell, Jay Scott for real. Larry Leese already sending in Super Chats. That's right. Super Chats are up. The Streamlabs are open. Send in your Streamlabs. Let us know what you want us to talk about or what questions you want us to answer. In fact, I'll bring it up here. Should have brought that up in my pre-pro. But I'll log in now so I'll see any Streamlabs that have come through for you all. And we will answer those questions throughout the show. Thank you, Larry Leese. Good morning to the awesome Roca. Good morning to you, awesome Larry Leese. Manny Gonzalez, Matt Marceau saying greetings from Detroit. Corey Camera, what's up? Ben Wellington is rolling through here as well. PLD! Oh!
Paul.
Morning to the, I don't know what that's all about, but all right. Morning to the awesome Alex Shashak. How are you? Michael Nip, morning, John and Alex. Yes, I want to see more of that. I appreciate that. Yeah, as Sean just said here, let's get the likes up, everyone. You know, I like to cross that 100 likes as quickly as possible and march towards the 150 likes. So if you're watching this live, give us some love, give us some likes. Let us get into it. Mr. Eng is rolling in here saying hi, and Logan Bordiga, and of course, Tim Franco. What's up, Tim? Good to see you.
Boy.
Joining us live, Tim. Oh, another super chat. Mukbang, good morning. Glad to see you both. An auspicious debut. Oh, very thank you. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Debut. And I want to give a little bit of love here to the people who subscribe to the Outlaw Nation channel. Remember, we're trying to get that 15,000 subscribers as we march towards 20,000. Anshit Bhagat, Luca Shashak. Oh, your husband subscribed. Well. Northland Pulp, Will McLean, 145 star one. Jesse Gonzalez, Eagle Bearer, and Girl What all subscribed here over the last 24 hours to the Outlaw Nation channel. Thank you all so much. And one last thing, we got a Streamlabs already. Good morning, Roca. Happy Monday. Fred Willard was a great character actor. I feel like he popped up in everything. He always brought a smile to my face. He will be missed. Also, welcome to the show, Alex. Congrats on the new phase, Roca. Well, thank you. There we go. All right, Ben. Yes, and we'll be talking about Fred Willard and offering our tributes up to both Fred Willard and Lynn Shelton right around the middle area of the show. But first, let's jump into our first topic here, Alex, and that is, of course, Scoob.
Scoob.
Some great numbers here on video on demand. It premiered at number one already on iTunes and Amazon Prime. And what's really impressive is it was done on the day of, whereas Trolls World Tour debuted at number one on its second day, and Sonic the Hedgehog was number five in its first day before jumping to number one. Their platform, and the reason we didn't get too much from Trolls on Apple is the Apple platform doesn't list releases that don't have a download option. But Universal also kind of did Warner Brothers a little bit of a solid here by not lowering the price weeks later, because it could have trained the audience to wait a couple of weeks till the price went down. Then they could have ordered it for a lower amount, but instead they kept the price the same for Trolls World Tour. So audiences were kind of encouraged to rent Scoob as soon as it came out at the top line price, because it was not going to dip. Of course, the other film there, Capone, also debuted at number two, I think. And that price point was $9.99. So good stuff there from the video on demand people doing their thing. So what do you think, Alex? Are you happy about this? Are you happy about Scoob debuting in the morning? Are you surprised by this? What do you think? The yet another film debuts at number one, makes a lot of money. I mean, Trolls World Tour made more money in its video on demand run right now than the first film did financially in its theatrical run. So you're looking at this. Is this another example of this possible trend that we're going to be seeing these films dropping on VOD more and more often?
I do think so. And also, something to remember is that this is not considered a very risky movie to put video on demand. Right. You know, it's a family film. It's an animated film. You know it's going to make money. You know it's going to be number one. Now, I am kind of curious, you know, just reading the articles that you kind of sent me, and I did some research on my own. Mm-hmm. It did debut at number one, which is fantastic. I hope to see more Scooby-Doo movies. I love them. But, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's a little bit of I don't like to say misunderstanding, but it seems like there's a little bit of miscommunication between, iTunes and, Amazon, things like that, because they're kind of putting their numbers up at different times.
Yeah.
One of them has like number one, but the other one has like number three, it depending on the time of day, all that good stuff. And so when the time comes when we do get much more movies, much more consistently debuting in this way, I'm sure they're gonna collaborate and find a way to really be like, yes, these movies are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to see how that is gonna move on forward, because you can't really talk about box office traditionally. This will be made $200 million on opening weekend. That's not a conversation we can really have right now.
I feel like there's a statistics nerd somewhere figuring out an algorithm to be able to get numbers more quickly and get the budget and the financial numbers quicker to us, because right now it takes weeks to get the numbers off VOD, because you're figuring out when they rented it, how much they rent, and then of course it always has to overlap over a month. It takes about a month to get all the numbers, or at least a month, could be up to 3 months to get the accurate numbers. We've seen in pay-per-views, which is the thing this is compared to the most, that it takes a few months for us to get the actual numbers, the actual buys, the actual amount of money that was spent, and then see the profits in that way. So I wonder about it as well. And of course, we're talking about when films come back. Will this be an avenue that more and more studios explore? Certainly, there was a lot of drama after some comments when Trolls World Tour did as well as it did from Universal versus AMC and National Association of Theater Owners. This seems to be yet another step forward. And you're right, Alex. We're looking at this and you're like, well, it's a family film. And Trolls was a family film. And you're comparing it to Sonic the Hedgehog. Once again, kind of a family film. Mm-hmm. What are these more independent, more adult fare, or possibly superhero fare? What would they do on VOD? I think we're going to find out sooner rather than later, because it sounds like the country is slowly starting to reopen with all this drama and protests and stuff like that. Do you think we're getting closer to that point where we're going to find out for real?
I'm kind of iffy, to be honest. I do think it's going to be a very long time until people are going to be... Theaters can open, that doesn't guarantee people are going to be comfortable enough to go to theaters. Yeah. Because, you know, even theaters right now, they're not entirely sure how they're going to open, just because, you know, I mean, are they going to have like three people, like people like separated by three seats kind of thing? Right, are they going to sell food? Are they not? And obviously concession stands is a huge part of how independent theaters make money.
Yeah.
Not only that, you know, people, a lot of people come to a theater as a family, you know, I mean, you got to use those AMC, you know, stubs, rewards and all that good stuff. So I am kind of curious to see not only pulling forward how this is going to debut, obviously, Scoop, it costs to rent for a weekend costs close to $25.
Yeah.
And I, you know, especially that is very cheap for taking your family out to the theater. So
it is.
I mean, if I had a few kids of my own, I'd be like, yeah, I'm taking advantage of all these movies coming out on demand. But you know, as someone that does like the occasional indie movie now and then, you know, the movies like Tom Hardy's Capone, The Assistant, you know, The High Note, from with Tracy Ellis Ross. There you go. You know, I was kind of interested as well to see how those movies were going to do because they didn't really have a huge marketing campaign,
right?
And they didn't have a lot of like well-known stars, except for maybe Hardy. But you know, he's already kind of risky as it is. let's be honest, though.
all right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Capone was it was dropped for $9.99. I think it was. So for $9.99, that's not bad when you're looking at a mid-rung independent film. Now, normally those films will drop on VOD at $5.99 because they've already had their run in the theater. But this is a different situation. So, I mean, Capone, once again, it's not that big of a harbinger of what's to come because it's not, it wasn't considered to be like a one that everyone was looking forward to. Of course, Josh Trank did do the rounds and was interviewed from a number of people, had that really explosive interview with Polygon where he revealed his feelings about Fantastic Four, what happened to him on that, and the Star Wars situation. Of course, our own friend Christian Harloff, he interviewed Josh Trank over on the Shmodown Entertainment Network. You can go watch that interview for about an hour, and Josh was very complimentary about it. So certainly that was cool, but Josh Trank isn't a name that's going to put butts in seats necessarily. So he's pitching, he was trying to push this smaller film and get it a little bit of love. I think as we get closer to this situation, hitting a boiling point, we'll find out which films are going to be dropped on VOD and which films are going to be released in theaters. And I think we'll have a better idea then. But either way, this feels to me like there is a taste in the public for this kind of entertainment. And I'll be curious to see what the numbers are because there were mixed reviews for Scoob. I liked it, but I know there are other people who didn't like it. And so we'll see if that affects the numbers as well down the road. Because somebody said to me the other day, and I want to get your thoughts on this. They thought Trolls World Tour did really well because yes, you can rent it for the weekend, but that when that child comes to you again on Wednesday and is like, I want to see that movie again, are you just to calm them down because they're home all day, you pay the $25 again just to get them to watch something and be out of your hair for a couple of days as well. I mean, that is kind of what's pushing the numbers here. That could happen for Scoob as well, don't you think?
I can definitely see that, you know, the psychology aspect of, you know, renting these movies is a huge motivator. But also I think it comes down to financials dominantly as well. I mean, at the end of the day, for a few hours, like you said, for a few hours, potential free time for a parent while everyone is home, especially if multiple kids, that's valuable time. Very valuable time. So you're taking advantage of every chance you get. So that's relatively cheap considering, inexpensive really compared to a lot of like the traditional theater experience. I am interested to see, other riskier movies really kind of come forward and trying to take advantage of the situation as well.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, is this something exclusive to, you know, this everything going on right now is like the moment, you know, we're going back to work and everything. When that starts going back, you know, back to normal per se, you know, is the whole on-demand thing really going to go up in the air?
Great question. You know? Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll find out. Because like I said, things are slowly starting to reopen. States are starting to push, you know, legislatures are starting to push these things where they want to open. So we will find out very, very soon what that situation is going to be like. Real quick, we had a big super chat come through here from Philip Brian Butler. Good morning, brother. Been listening to you since you first appeared on Collider. I listen to the Cinephiles every week. Also love the Geek Buddies. Rare I catch a live stream. Stay sweaty. Thanks for the years of entertainment. Oh, thank you, Philip. That's very, very kind. And of course, stay sweaty. A nice reference to the late, great John Schnepp. A lot of people celebrated his passing over the weekend. I did not put up a picture. I know a lot of people put up pictures. I just kind of remember him in my own way on that day. So, you know, it just wasn't my thing. But definitely missing the big man upstairs. He was incredible and so much fun to work with. So, but thank you, Philip. Really appreciate the shout out there. A lot of love for Alex in here. So that's cool. Good to see. We've got some Streamlabs that came through. Let's run through these and then we'll jump into our next topic here, Alex. Michael Nip said, watched Color Out of Space last night. It was insane in a good way. Any takes on it? Alex, have you seen that one yet from Schmodown's own Brendan Meyer?
No, not yet. I actually, it's on my watch list to see this week. Okay. Right now, like I mentioned, I'm trying to watch James Brooks movies and movies from the Thin Man franchise.
William Powell and Myrna Loy. There it is. William Powell and Myrna Loy. Yes. Okay.
They're ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Anyway, but I have been wanting to watch that for a while. It's actually on my watch list for this week for sure.
You caught me mid-drink. I loved it. I had a really great time with that one. I interviewed both the director, Richard Stanley, and Brendan Meyer in the main cast for a couple of deep cuts. So if people want to go and listen to those interviews, they're on the Outlaw Nation channel. Now, absolutely, I enjoy the film a lot. I thought that's a difficult novel to translate onto film, and I think they did a really good job with it. Some fantastic performances from the actors involved. I mean, and who doesn't like a good Nicolas Cage getting whacked out by a foreign object coming down from the space? Andrew G said, I loved Scooby-Doo since I was 3 years old, and I really liked this new movie. It had a really cool style with the design and animation, vivid colors that really made everything pop. Yeah, I agree with that. Did you get a chance to see it, Alex, or no?
No, I have not. I saw a handful of scenes, but I have not seen the movie itself. But I agree, like from the handful of stills and everything I did see, I mean, it is very, very stunning. You know, there's animated movies, they cost a lot of money to make.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm glad you can really see how beautiful it is. And that really kind of is showcased for sure. The colors. Yes. It looks like a Jack Kirby comic. I mean,
well, it's the same production designer. That's a good reference, actually, Jack Kirby. That's a great reference. It's the same production designer who did Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse. So they consciously wanted to use him. Andrew G kept going, said, but Will Forte kept throwing me off. All I could hear was him and not Shaggy. I would have liked it more if they had Matthew Lillard voice him like he has been doing in the animated movies up until now, but still a really fun movie and would like to see more. Well, I interviewed the director of Scoob. That will be up tomorrow. That's a deep cut interview. Me and him, we sat down for about 45 minutes, 50 minutes and talked about the film, talked about his experience and the love he has for Hanna-Barbera. He is a big, big fan of that type of cartoon and animated series. He spent a lot of time researching that, exploring that, speaking to people who were involved with those characters. So there was a lot of love from his end trying to make this movie and update it for 2020. Bruce Bain, one last Streamlab here. Sup guys, lovely day in the UK here weather-wise. Well, it's raining here in LA. It's past 4, so I'm having a pre-workout right now. Oh, Roka. Ooh. I gotta say, I still dig you despite your utter blasphemy regarding the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit films. Did you ever get the dumbbells? No, I have still not got those Bowflex dumbbells. They're way too expensive. I am not gonna pay $700 for a pair of dumbbells. I would like to get them around 4 or 5, but people have upcharged the hell out of them, so I have not. Yeah. But what's the reaction there, Alex? What's the Lord of the Rings reaction? What's this all about? You don't agree with me? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I mean, it's Lord of the Rings. Okay, to me, it's my second favorite trilogy of all time. Wow. But come on, it's the Lord of the Rings. It is the best example of world building. Arguably one of the best examples of world building we've ever had. Don't get me wrong, Peter Jackson's not a great director. He's neither here or there. Ooh, but that movie.
Wow, strong hot take. There it is, hot take.
To me, it's not a hot take. I mean, how many movies outside of the Elitary trilogy. I mean, because The Hobbit, let's not even talk about that. I mean, I do like Heavenly Creatures.
Okay. All right. Have you seen Frighteners yet?
Have I seen what?
Frighteners? The Frighteners?
No, I have not. There's a bunch of movies I haven't seen.
Yeah, that's a good Peter Jackson one, The Frighteners. That's a really good one. Mm. Skip the King Kong remake. I hated that. Let's see here. Mukbang Review says, live chat is loving the upgrade to the show. Alex is terrific. I agree. Thoroughly agree.
Thank you.
And then Jake Iacovetta throwing in some Streamlabs. That's right. Keep sending in the Streamlabs. Keep sending in the Super Chats. Really appreciate you all doing that. And, of course, PLD throwing the Patreon up. Maybe we should. And I'll address that just in a little bit later on down the show. But, yes, that is the Patreon there. You can also see it in the graphic above my head right there. Go and get involved with the Patreon. So many things going on there. And I'm sure Alex will have stuff to plug as we go along a little bit later on in the show as well. All right. Let's move on to our second topic. And we should get this going right now because people are incredibly excited for this. And that is Stargirl. Stargirl is coming out. On the CW, and this is exciting stuff. A lot of articles already being written for season one coming out here really soon, and it will feature even more Golden Age characters. The upcoming series stars Breck Bassinger as high school student Courtney Whitmore, who takes up the mantle of Stargirl. It will focus on her relationship with her stepfather, Pat Dugan, a.k.a. Stripe, as well as her formation of the new JSA, and I think Alex has something about the new JSA there sitting next to her. What have you got?
That's no big deal. I'm just going to casually whip this on screen. It's a quick weekend read.
Yes.
I'm just going
to. Wow. So you are a big fan of the JSA, huh?
Well, actually, I would say I'm not a huge fan of the JSA. I love what it does. I mean, the Bronze Age, you know, obviously is pretty fantastic. Silver Age. But I actually talked to my husband about this last night. I was like, because he's been a fan of comics for years. I was back in my day, I was actually much more into graphic novels more than anything, but, you can't argue that the JSA, like what makes it arguably much more not to say more iconic, but definitely more, I get to say nicer than the Justice League specifically, is that it's much more generational.
Yeah.
Where they're actively teaching the younger generations, you know, how to fight crime and how to save the world and all that good stuff, you know, versus the Justice League, they like to stick to their core.
their
handful, you know, the Trinity and everything. So, you know, again, it's, you know, I just think it's lovely. It's beautiful. Not to mention Geoff Johns. I mean, Geoff Johns, he created Stargirl, which is amazing. And also, I didn't realize until recently, but he is a producer and producer on the show, which I think is fantastic. So I'm really excited to see, you know, as someone that created the character of Stargirl and really implemented one of the best, most beloved comics of all time, especially in the last 20 years, you know, how that's really going to come into introducing the JSA into television, as far as I know, for the first time.
Yeah. Well, look, you're going to get so many characters in this show. You've got Icicle, you've got Wildcat being a part of this thing as well. There are so many shows. And Geoff Johns, you just mentioned at a Q&A on DC Universe's website, and that's where it's going to stream on DC Universe. So you want to get that too. And listen, get that just for the Harley Quinn show alone. But this Stargirl one is getting a lot of love, a lot of buzz. And during a Q&A, he responded, sorry if you hear the truck outside. He said, there was a question, will we be seeing any new characters that have been introduced yet into the Arrowverse on Stargirl? Now remember real quickly that this is taking place on another Earth, but still in the Arrowverse, just on another Earth. And he responded and said, yes, you will, but I cannot say who. They are from the Golden Age, though. So that means even more characters are going to be involved here. The trailers have already been out. The teaser trailer is showing all the different characters that will be in this. I got to give a shout out to my friend, my former classmate there at Florida State, Joe Knezovich. He's playing one of the members of the Injustice Society of America, who is going up against the Justice Society of America. And I'm going to try to get him for like a mini interview about his experience on Stargirl sometime later on in the week or next week. So that'll be fun to have Joe on and actually talk to him in a professional manner rather than just shooting the shit over text or on the phone. So this will be, I love this idea. I've seen all the trailers. Yeah. Brainwave, Tigress, Dragon King. Those are all members of the Injustice Society. You see this, you know, Alex, does this excite you that this is a you know, they're going forward with this? Remember, there's been so much crap given to the idea of having female-led superhero, female-led franchises, female, like, are you excited about this? It's like, we're not listening to the noise, we're powering forward.
I don't want to have a show with a female lead just to have a female lead.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, it's just like saying, you know, I don't want to have a Harlequin show just because, you know, it's a female-led, you know, animated show right, now, which is amazing. It's actually really fantastic. Everyone should go watch it. But
yes, it is.
But this show is actually, you know, it's really great. I mean, a lot of it's not a lot of well-known actors or anything, but it's a lot of these characters are pretty iconic. If you want to go into Wonder Woman, I mean, it's not the Wonder Woman as we know it, but the JSA Wonder Woman is actually, you know, Wonder Woman's mom who she played. Connie Nielsen actually played her.
Connie Nielsen. Yep.
Yeah, I can't pronounce her name. It's like Hippolyta.
Hey, Hippolyta. Yes.
Yeah, Hippolyta. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, Wildcat. I mean, classic Flash, classic Green Lantern. So we're gonna go into a lot of these classic original characters and the original adaptations. I'm really excited to see how that happens. I mean, are we gonna see a potential, you know, training of, you know, Batman? I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of a lot of different directions we can go to. I mean, we have Batwoman. I mean, Batgirl. Yeah. So there, again, there's a lot of different directions. But I am honestly more excited for potential character introductions of heroes rather than villains.
Yeah.
Especially in this with the JSA and everything. And they're not, I don't like to say they're scared of including female characters or anything, because obviously they're not, you know,
I mean, Wildcat's female in this version.
So exactly.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I just don't want them to include a fleet of characters just to be like, see, we're feminists too. You know, that's like defeating the purpose, you know,
also,
you want it to feel natural.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, Alex. And also you do want to have characters that organically feel part of the world and not shoved in or thrown in just for the occasional fan spike, you know, and then you're like, oh, it's a waste. You know, like, oh, Captain Phasma, great. Oh, you did nothing with her. And so you don't want to have anything like that. It's very, very true. And I think that's what's, see, when I started getting into comics, JSA was like a forgotten title. They were rarely doing any JSA stuff. And I love, and towards the end of the 80s, early 90s is when the JSA kind of started making a slow comeback and started having its own line again. And people started getting into it because they wanted to go back to that time when superheroes were a bit more noble, less conflicted about stuff. And then as you discover more and more going on in the JSA, that actually the stuff they were conflicted about is similar, just a little bit different because of the time. It's almost that noble idea, right? Of like the World War II superheroes. So that kind of stuff is cool. Updating it for now, I think this will be interesting on Stargirl. And this is a great cast, Alex. Luke Wilson as Pat Dugan. You got Joel McHale as Starman. You've got Yvette Monreal as Wildcat, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Amy Smart is in this thing, who I've always been a fan of as an actress. Let's see who you got. And I think those are pretty much the big names that are involved in this. I wanted to see where my boy, Lou Ferrigno Jr. is in this. That's right, Lou. We've lived long enough that there is a Lou Ferrigno Jr. And yes, my friend Joe Knezovich is playing the wizard. He plays the wizard in this. So and this cast list is just stacked. So you know these episodes are going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of people involved in this, so I'm looking forward to it as well. All right, and let's jump into some Streamlabs here real quick. Will you broadcast next Monday, holiday, or take a break? Enjoy either way. I will be available. I don't know if Alex has plans for the holiday, but I certainly will broadcast. Alex, any plans right now?
Do I have plans?
Let's say TBD.
I didn't know next week was already a holiday. What year is it? What day of the week is it? I don't know.
All right, we'll say TBD on Alex again, so we'll see.
As of now, I assume yes. I have no plans, so I should be available, but.
There we go. Let's see if any more Streamlabs have come through. All right, no new Streamlabs have come through, so keep them coming. Send them through when you want to hear our thoughts on what's going on and what we're talking about. Oh, here, sorry. One just came through. Arthur Morgan. I know you're a Western guy, Roka, so have you ever played Red Dead Redemption 2? If not, I recommend you watch the cutscenes because it's one of the best video games of all time. It's like a movie. Do you think we'll ever get a resurgence of Westerns in the future? Alex, do you play Red Dead?
I personally don't. I don't play video games, honestly. My husband, however, I used to watch him play, especially Red Dead Redemption. There's a handful just because the stories, the visuals, they're just so beautiful. Not to mention the scores of a lot of these video games are gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
But I would actually just sit and just watch them play for hours.
Wow.
I mean, because they are stunning, but Red Dead Redemption is definitely included. It's a very, very awesome show to watch. I mean, sorry. So it's not a show. It's not a movie. It's a
game. Yeah.
I have to remember that, especially when it comes to, because it's really, really fantastic. And I even mentioned it to Lucas not too long ago. I was like, if this isn't made into a movie in the next 5 years, I don't know what we're doing.
Right.
Like, well, where's the video game adaptations, you know, because they say, you know, it's impossible to adapt a video game, you know, successfully. I'm like, give them the rights to this movie because it's stunning.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Go play it.
Well,
watch it, play it.
Look, it's an honest mistake to make, Alex, because they have become so cinematic, these games. Mm-hmm. I did buy Red Dead Redemption. It was on sale like a few months ago. Yeah. I have it for the Xbox, and I will be playing it on my Twitch channel. If you want to come see a man get super frustrated playing a video game, you can go, and I'm going to be doing more Twitch stuff this week. The Outlaw Nation, all one word, lowercase. Go and follow me there, and I'll be playing that game once I get that Elgato capture card coming in, and I'll be playing FIFA. But yes, I'm excited to play Red Dead Redemption. Dennis Zhang back at my old outlet wouldn't let me off the hook about it, kept telling me how great it was, so he will be excited to know that I'm going to play it very, very soon. But yes, it looks fantastic.
Are you saying, though, honestly, that people take these games really intensely by yelling at the screen, you know, when they get frustrated at a certain point in the game, like, I don't know about you, but I'm a very calm person. That would never happen under any circumstances. I never lose my cool.
Yeah, it's totally true, Alex.
Get yourself
very
together.
Chill. That's why I got her on the show. She's very chill. No. My girlfriend gets mad at me when I yell at the TV when I'm watching a TV show. Like, I have this annoying habit of pausing in the middle of an episode to ask a question or look up someone's IMDb because I'm always curious to see where I saw that person. It drives her insane. Yeah, my brain is constant. She's like, can we just watch the show? I just want to watch the show. You're ruining the rhythm of the show. And she's totally right. But I have a thing where I have ADD where I have to stop and just take a look and find out and blah, 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 and move forward. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I have
an annoying. If you don't look it up there.
I know, right?
Honestly, there's like been times I'm watching a movie and I'm like, I can't continue watching this movie because I'm actively trying to figure out in my head while watching this scene, this horrible dramatic scene, trying to figure out who that voice is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or, it gets in your head, gets in your head. You want to find out. Yeah. It drives her nuts. Hey guys, we got about 150 of you all in here. Thank you so much for joining us live at those numbers. Really appreciate that. But only 81 likes. So please swing that cursor button over. Get us over 100 likes. Let's start marching towards 150 likes. But let's get to the 100 likes first. So do that. Swing right over there. Hit that like button and give us some love. All right. Do I have any more? I don't want to miss any more. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Andrew Hale sent one in. Thank you, Andrew. One of the patrons of the Outlaw Nation. He said, excited for the new era of Outlaw Nation, 4 new upcoming shows, Mornings with the Outlaw and Madam Alex. That's the Outlaw Nation has gravitas. Do you like this? Do you like the Madam Alex nickname, or do you want another nickname for the Outlaw Nation?
I don't know.
It's like you run a crossroad.
I sound old, Madam Alex.
Okay, all right. You can pick another one.
Can I be a gunslinger? Can I be?
Hell yeah.
Can someone give me a gunslinger name? I want a cowboy name.
I like that. Hey, in the chat, you guys come up. Send them some streamlabs. Send them some super chats and suggest a name for Alex. Suggest a name for Alex in the Outlaw Nation as a gunslinger. And we'll see if she says yes to any of them. Suggest names. But what he mentioned here on the Outlaw Nation, that is absolutely right. There's 4 new shows coming here every Friday. I will drop one episode of one of these shows. The Criterion Corner, The Outpost, which is essentially my mailbag show or Q&A show. The OK Corral, which is a debate show. Not to be confused with Schmo Bates, completely different. The OK Corral. And the Outlaw Rides again, where one a patron or a guest will interview me about one of my old Schmodown matches, and we rewatch that match all the way through. You can do that at patreon.com/John Rocha. Plus the two hangouts, one on Discord and one on Blue Jeans on camera on Thursdays, the Discord one on Wednesdays, and then random movie watch-alongs. When I'm in the mood, I'll just put on a movie and just watch along and record a commentary track for that. So those are the things that are happening. Go get involved with the patreon.com. And shout out to Andrew Hill, who just dropped that super chat. Andrew is now in charge of the Discord. I know there have been complaints about how the Discord has been a little bit slow, hasn't been as active. We're changing that. So Andrew's going to be in charge of that and making us way more active on the Discord. And they've already reached out to Alex to interview me for one of these Patreon shows. I found out yesterday. I had no idea. So I picked some good people. They're shaking the trees, which I appreciate. Ooh, Calamity Alex. Ooh, interesting. Ooh. Sheriff Shawshank is another one.
Man. that list, that's bringing out the lisp in me. Sheriff Shawshank.
The rule is she can't pick her nickname. This is 2020, Sean. She can pick her nickname, for God's
sake. Sean, stop being so logical.
No, Sean. All right, let's move on to our next story. Let me see where we are in the rotation. Oh, that's right. It's time for my man, Timothy Oliphant. Where is he? I know he's up here somewhere. I know I put him here somewhere. There is. Boom. That's right. Timothy Oliphant has been confirmed to be in The Mandalorian. We're getting this from The Hollywood Reporter. The Justified actor will appear in the second season. So, Alex, we're getting all these cast members announced here. We recently had we started off with Temuera Morrison recently becoming back supposedly as Boba Fett. Of course, we had Ahsoka Tano be revealed with Rosario Dawson. Michael Biehn is supposed to be a part of this thing. We've got directors like Robert Rodriguez, Peyton Reed coming back into the fold. But of course, this is exciting news for a lot of people who enjoy Timothy Oliphant's work and also enjoy The Mandalorian. This is a good combo. We were talking off camera before we started. You mentioned he's a gunslinger, as you just mentioned you are as well. He's a gunslinger. So logically, he had to get involved in this because this show is a Western and a samurai show. What's your thoughts about Timothy Oliphant getting on board?
Hashtag not enough samurai movies. Just saying. Yeah, he has a history of doing a lot of physical roles, you know, in television as well as movies. He was in Fargo. I love Fargo. That movie is that show is, and movie is fantastic. That's but anyway, great. Santa Clarita Diet. So he's no stranger to black comedy. So being very physical in that movie, he's literally helping his wife be a zombie, essentially. Justified at Deadwood. So he's no stranger to not only being physical, but he's no stranger to really working with props, being a gunslinger, you know, playing that kind of character. So I really wouldn't be surprised if he kind of takes on a similar role in Mandalorian season two. Now, I did, honestly, going into it, my hunch was telling me, you know, maybe he could, because of his history, he could definitely be a fellow Mandalorian or maybe be a stormtrooper, but it would be kind of fun because it's as a gunslinger kind of character, he would constantly miss at the same time. So that's neither here or there, but I would love him to be, you know, be a character similar to like Moff Gideon, you know, with Giancarlo Esposito's character. I would love to see that happen. But also he was one of my favorite characters of the entire show.
Yeah, did you like The Mandalorian? Did you enjoy that first season?
Who didn't love that show? Yeah, oh my gosh.
Good point. There's a lot of love for that show. But then all these actors, I mean, you got, of course, Gina Carano coming back as her character. Carl Weathers coming back, the character he played. We got all these people coming back. Are we starting to reach the, you know, because I saw articles. Listen, by the way, I said this unprompted by anything I read. I said this on Geek Buddies or one of the shows last week. I said it's starting to feel a little bit like Rise of Skywalker, where they're shoving in too many characters. And lo and behold, like 2 days later, I started seeing all these articles about the same feeling. So certainly I was on the same universal wavelength as other people hearing these announcements saying that's great that all these actors are involved in this. But by the same token, is this too many characters? Are we playing too much fan service? Are we swamping the series in the second season instead of just enjoying it as it went along? What do you think?
I feel a little similar when it comes to that. I do feel like there are a lot of movies that and TV shows that when you start adding more characters, more subplots, it definitely does. It doesn't always do the show good specifically, but especially this one, you know, we're very invested in this show, obviously. Mm-hmm. And with The Mandalorian in particular has so many books, so many at the video games. I mean, it has a huge, huge history. Now, what it doesn't, concern me that they're adding characters. What does concern me, however, is people that are starring as them. Because sometimes when I watch a movie, you know, like we were saying earlier, like we're constantly thinking to ourselves, you know, as you and I mean, like they're trying to watch new movies and stuff all the time. You know, like who is that? Who's that voice? Who's the guy that says that voiceover? Who does this? Who does that? And, you know, when you watch a movie with so many faces and voices that you recognize, it kind of takes you out of the show a little bit. Sure. Yeah, I remember having a handful of those moments, like when we meet the Mandalorian, and I was like, hey, that's like a cool comedian guy. I like him. And he's like, he got a Mandalorian. Good for him. Yeah, you know, having those little moments, it can... I don't want to say it takes me... Well, actually, it does. It really does. It can take me out of the... watching the show, having that initial experience, to be honest. So I am a little iffy on that. Yeah,
you're a bit wary, you would say.
But yeah, I do a lot of, I love a lot of the actors individually. It's just it's a lot of people we recognize.
Yeah, and I think we're right to be trepidatious because, you know, the trilogy didn't really turn out that satisfactory to a lot of people and to another, to some other people it did. But to a large portion of the, at least the vocal reactions, they did not enjoy how the trilogy went. It was a bit uneven, to be kind, in that analysis of that trilogy. So we don't want to get burned again because people have held on to the Mandalorian like they're holding on to Baby Yoda. It's this precious thing they don't want to drop and don't want anything to happen to it. But if you start to, and they worry when they hear all these names, all these actors getting involved, is it too much? And will it, you know, kind of capsize the boat? And it'll be like, oh, they're just trying to do, it'll turn into the animated show, which is, you know, villain of the week or, you know, character of the week, that kind of stuff. You want to have it a little bit more of a through line throughout. But, you know, in Filoni, I trust. I just have a feeling him and Favreau are fine. And they're not scrambling to finish this thing because they already shot it before the lockdowns went into a place, and they're working on the post stuff at home, you know, remotely. So I think that I will suggest something for some people. I like him being playing Cad Bane. Maybe you talk about a gunslinger. That is essentially the influence of Cad Bane, that character in the Clone Wars and in the comic books and in the Legends material. Cad Bane. Here's a closer look at him right there. That's how he was in Clone Wars. It's a pretty badass character. A lot of people enjoy Cad Bane and think he could be, you know, I've seen Ben Goddard suggest he might be playing Cad Bane. Wouldn't that be interesting? Like I said, he took, and George Lucas took the inspiration for Cad Bane from Western film actors like Lee Van Cleef, who played Angel Eyes in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Colonel Mortimer and for a few dollars more. So these influences have been here in The Mandalorian for quite some time, and he's a gunslinger, and Cad Bane certainly is an interesting character. One of my geek buddies, Michael Vogel, he said, well, why would you cast someone as beautiful or attractive as Timothy Oliphant and then put him in a getup where he can't take it off or he'd die, you know? So I don't know. I still think, though, the Western aspect of it all. I mean, remember in Rango, he played an animated Clint Eastwood character, the Spirit of the West. So I don't think he has a problem voicing over a character where he doesn't get seen necessarily. And I would argue, if you're just doing voiceover for a character, you don't have to physically be on the set. That's way easier for an actor than to actually be on the set, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. It just came down to, honestly, because they're totally done with season two. I honestly thought if he's going to be involved, it would probably be like maybe a smidgen and really a teaser for season three. So when we really get his, you know, real character introduction for sure. Yeah. Not only that, but Tom Cruise was supposed to be Iron Man, but he's like, how am I going to be Iron Man only, but you're going to cover this beautiful Tom Cruise face? Like, and Robert Downey Jr. is like, you can cover my face all you want. So I'm kind of wondering, if they're being flexible at all, because obviously actors, they need their faces on screen a lot of the times, you know, in order to be that much more recognizable, in order to make that much more money, etc. So I wouldn't be surprised if he were that character, that'd be pretty cool. You know, almost obviously like Nick Nolte's character, we recognize him like being involved, you know, the extent
great
that he
points. Great yeah. points. Yeah.
Also where it kind of, there was like hints of him. You see him and you're like, it reminds me of someone.
Right.
But at the same time, definitely not him, obviously. So I wonder if I might take something along that route.
Yeah, you could construct the Cad Bane mask to have Oliphant features, facial features on it. So in essence, you are getting the hint of Timothy Oliphant and hearing his voice. The Nick Nolte thing you bring up is a fantastic point. Look, I get it. Maybe Nick Nolte at this advanced age, not the most attractive dude on the planet. No offense.
How dare you? I know.
I apologize. But he's got a charm to him still as an actor. And that character he played in the first season of Mandalorian was fantastic. You know, if there's anything my girlfriend's taken away from that show is that she says, I have spoken when we've come to the end of our disagreements. So she has adapted that. So that's been an interesting thing to happen. All right. We got some Streamlabs that came through, Alex. One from Andrew G here goes, here's a hot take. I fucking love the Super Mario Brothers movie. Been dreaming of a sequel that will never happen since I saw it in the theater. LOL. Any thoughts on the Super Mario Brothers? Does that come up in your training at all?
I don't want to talk about that. I have seen it for training purposes. I'm not going to lie, because I have two competitors in my faction that are in IG. So I had to write down notes while watching that movie, and I pretty much cried the entire time because it is visual garbage. But maybe that's supposed to be the point, because he's a garbage man kind of, or a plumber kind of thing.
That should be on the poster. Visual garbage.
Visual garbage. Yeah.
Andrew Burnett sent in one. He says, loving the new era. I had a great question, but I forgot to run it by Brandon Hannah first. Don't want a video calling me out. May I suggest the sheriff for Alex's name, Sheriff and the Outlaw? I don't know. Sheriff's been done. Scott Mance took sheriff. You know, I don't know. It's up to Alex what she feels comfortable with. But if she likes sheriff.
I can't take any. If the man himself, the Mance himself, had taken it, I don't think I can. I love the idea. Thank you. I respect it.
Yeah.
But Mance. It's Mance. Mance!
One here from Hill Nellums. Hill Nellums, who showed up on the Blue Jeans chat on Thursday with the on the Patreon. Thank you, Hill. Good to see you, man, in person for the first time. He said, as long as they're not being forced into the overall story and it all develops organically, I'm all for seeing these characters. I think both of us have that point of view as well, Alex. We want it to work seamlessly and organically in the show, just like you mentioned with Stargirl. We don't want the character shoved in.
But at the same time, if Brad Pitt walked in, I'd be like, what? I don't care if he is like another Mandalorian that just like, or not Mandalorian, but I mean, like if he was like another character where he was just casually sitting at the bar or something, I would be like, what is happening? This is not the show.
Right, right.
This is a joke scene or something. That would be my gut impulse if someone like something like a situation like that happened. Yeah. So you can be big, but not too big.
You can't
be a star, essentially.
Right. It's like watching him 12 Years a Slave. You watch him and you're like, what are you doing in here?
Yeah. It's like, you're not supposed to. But if Michael Fassbender came in, I'd be like, okay, I can see that. But if Angelina Jolie or Jennifer Aniston walked in, I'd be like, no. hard pass.
Yeah, I'd like to see Aniston in The Mandalorian. That'd be interesting. Let's see. Jake Iacovetta. I don't know who this person is that's on screen with you, but I guess she's okay. There you go. A little Action Army ball busting from Jake Iacovetta. There it is. You get the smug face. Let's see. This one from Ben Rayner. What you think of Deputy Shawshank? Sounds good. I don't. Deputy seems lower than what Alex would be.
Ben,
you know?
Ben, my dude, I love you. We're in a few groups together. But that, you can do better than that. Come on now. You know that.
Wow. There you go. You've been challenged, Ben. You've been challenged. Work a little harder. All right. Let's move on to a little bit of a sadder part of the show. And that's, let's do some tributes here to, we lost a couple of pretty talented people over the weekend, Alex, and kind of sad to see them go. Certainly Fred Willard, first one we should talk about, I think, for just an incredible talent. You know, he was known for his scene stealing, his improv work, and all those Christopher Guest movies. I mean, you could argue some of the best scenes in those Christopher Guest movies star Fred Willard. And apparently he improv pretty much all of his dialogue. He'd been working for so many decades in this business, all the way back to the 60s, for God's sakes. I remember seeing him on NBC on this show called Real People, which of course had Byron Allen, I think, involved in it as well, who is now like a mega producer in Hollywood. So many people were involved in that show. But then from there, seeing him on Spinal Tap, seeing him on, you know, films like Fun with Dick and Jane, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, Anchorman. He was really funny in Anchorman. Oh. He won three Emmys. He got nominated for three Emmys for playing father-in-law Hank McDougal on Everybody Loves Raymond. And he received a fourth Emmy nomination for his work as Frank Duffy, which is Ty Burrell's dad in A Modern Family. Born in Cleveland in 1933, played baseball at BMI, and just kind of fell into the world of acting after he got out of the Army, and from there just became an incredibly funny and beloved actor. What are some of your favorite memories of Fred Willard there, Alex?
Some of the first very specific Fred Willard movies that I remember. My first thought when he passed, I was like, oh my gosh, Best in Show.
Yes.
You know, right? A Mighty Wind.
Oh, yeah.
He's fantastic, especially in those. I read a few articles talking about how he was like one of the people, one of the actors that really not only was amazing at improv, you know, famously doing so in a majority of his movies, but also at the same time, he created this. It's almost like the, like, not so much like stupid humor, but at the same time, he was supposed to be like innocent and sometimes stupid, but same time your boss kind of thing. It's like a mixture of all those things, but you love him at the same time. And it's like, especially in Best in Show. I mean, he's so funny. He's by far, he's like, he plays one of the show casters, essentially the show host for, you know, the dog show. And it's gold. I can watch hours upon hours of just him just talk about dogs.
Yeah.
And like, and Eugene Levy's character, that's literally two left feet. Oh, it's just ridiculous. I love it. Yeah.
That film is so good. Here's a couple of lines from Best in Show. You'd think they'd want to breed them bigger, wouldn't you? Like grapefruits or watermelons. And then marveling at a judge examining the gait of a beagle, he says, good way to judge a woman, have her run away from you and then run back. And that's the things you just speak about, Alex. He was able to get away with stuff that other people, other comics or other actors, it might sound crude coming out of their mouths, but because Fred has such a sweet face, he had such a charm to him that you were able to laugh at the things he was saying rather than to take them in an offensive way. And that takes a true gifted performer to understand their timing, their ability to say certain things, and the way to make it funny and not offensive. And he certainly had a history of doing that in a number of films and TV shows radio shows. He's on late night talk shows doing sketches as well, guesting on Jimmy Kimmel a few times. So many things. And, his last project, Space Force, he was in the trailer for that. And you saw him kind of shaking and quivering. So you felt like, oh my gosh, he is kind of getting up there, getting to that age. So to hear that he passed away, although sad, absolutely sad, because losing any, and in this world that is so full of a lot of drama and tough, evil stuff going on in the world, anytime we lose a comedian, I think is a sad thing, because we lose some laughter that we could enjoy and help us through the tough times. But he leaves an incredible legacy, Alex. If you're going to go like way later in life and have this incredible resume of work that people can go back and re-experience and, fall back in love with you and what you were able to do, don't you think?
I mean, he has like one, absolutely. He's one of those voices, one of those people, those comedians. Whenever you see him on screen, your heart just warms up and you know you're about to laugh. So you're excited. So we're going to sit down for a few extra minutes because you recognize him.
Yeah.
He's done tremendous work, obviously, not only in movies and TV shows, but his voiceover work is fantastic. He's so funny. Yeah. He has such a iconic voice. He has a very specific voice that I don't think anyone can duplicate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really kind of hurts me to say that, you know, he's passed. So, you know, I know he's been with us for a very long time. He's done so much. And so I'm so excited to, you know, revisit a lot of his work. And yeah, yeah.
Great point. The other unfortunate loss we had over the weekend was director Lynn Shelton, really a trailblazing director as a female director, doing numerous shows on TV and films as well. She's someone mm-hmm. that she directed a bunch of my favorite episodes of GLOW, and also so many great shows that she was involved in as a director. Recently, Little Fires Everywhere, the Reese Witherspoon, Kerry Washington show. She did an episode of The Morning Show. She did episodes from Love, that show with Jillian Jacobs. Is that right? From Community, I think that's her name. Fresh Off the Boat, The Good Place, Santa Clarita Diet, The Mindy Project, Master of None, New Girl. She even directed an episode of Mad Men. Someone, and also an actress and a producer and a writer and an editor and a cinematographer, and worked in the camera and lecture. So many things that she did, as a director and as an actress and as a producer and as a writer, that deserves so much love and credit from the Hollywood community and from the entertainment community or fans worldwide who have enjoyed her work. I mean, honestly, some of my favorite GLOW episodes are her episodes. She just knew how to get those ladies in certain positions and how to direct them to bring out the best of their work as actresses. And it was fun to watch.
Absolutely. She has a very specific directorial style, which I respect. And she, when she was chosen to direct some of these episodes, for example, the Mad Men episode in particular, she came in to direct the episode where I can't remember her name, Joan. Yeah, I think it's Joan, where she decides that she wants to have an abortion. Yeah. And going about that sensitive time for her character, you know, it requires a director, a writer, and everything that are very sensitive to the situation. And it was done so beautifully. So, you know, not only that, like you said, with GLOW and everything, again, it's one of my favorite episodes of GLOW. That's one of my favorite shows of all time. It's
yes.
I watch it, everyone. But yeah, she's, you know, she's really wonderful. The way she tackles a lot of, you know, female characters, a lot of, I love the way she tackles like the women's quarter life crisis, which she kind of like, where she might seem like in the way in movies, like women and men kind of tackle their quarter life crises and, you know, in different ways. And I love how she kind of really touches on that in a lot of her movies. Yeah. Like you said, you know, with, she did a episode of Shameless, I think it was,
Paradise Lost. Yeah.
Yeah. Paradise Lost, which is arguably one of the best episodes in the entire show, the award-winning show. You know, she did Hump Day, Your Sister's Sister, Little Fires Everywhere, like you said, Mad Men, and like mentioned, like I just said. So she's really great the way she talks about women, her characters, in a very wonderful way, respectful way.
And the storylines that she tackles in these episodes, you know, I think producers go to the directors they know can handle these topics in a deft way, but not in an easy way. And I love that that decorated her work throughout. She passed from an undisclosed or blood disorder that it was undiagnosed. It was a previously undiagnosed blood disorder, according to a representative, Adam Kirsch. Her partner, the comedian actor Mark Maron, speaking of GLOW, said she collapsed on Friday after having been ill for a week, but it is not coronavirus related. He said it was previously unknown underlying conditions. The doctors could not save her. They tried hard. she said, I'm sorry, Mark Maron said he issued a statement. He said, she was my partner. She was my girlfriend. She was my friend. And I loved her a lot. And she loved me. And I knew that. I don't know that I had ever felt what I felt with her before. I do know, actually, I did not. I have not. I was getting used to love in the way of being able to accept it and show it properly in an intimate relationship. I was so comfortable with this person, with Lynn Shelton. I was able to exist in a place of self-acceptance because of her love for me. I made her laugh all the time. She made me laugh. We were happy. So truly a devastating loss for Mark Maron as well, who's one of my influences for doing what I do. Mark Maron, his WTF podcast really motivated me, him and Bill Simmons, the two guys I point to the most, who motivated me to get into this sphere that I'm in now. So to hear him take a loss, especially if you've listened to all the WTF stuff, he is never shy about talking about his personal life. This loss now, you know, it feels very devastating. If you want to listen to more of him, you can go to his latest WTF episode where he talks about his feelings for Lynn. I just hope Mark's okay as well. He's been known to spiral. He's been known to get into depression, depressing places. And hopefully there is something there to kind of, there's a system in place to keep Mark from doing any kind of damage to himself, because we know these losses can be very difficult for people. Once they find that one person they're supposed to be with, and sounds like Mark is saying that, it's difficult to take that loss for sure. You know, our own Craig Gaynor is dealing with that from the Schmodown as well, sadly. So, you know, tough situations all around, but she leaves once again, short time, but leaves an incredible legacy as a female director.
Yes.
You know, and we want more of that in our entertainment, in our world, more opportunities for everybody across the board who have not had traditionally those opportunities, made available to them, so to speak.
So, absolutely.
All right. Well, there you go. RIP to both of them. We will, we'll see. I'm sure we'll remember their work and explore their work more and more as our lives go along in this world. But let me see if we've got any more Streamlabs or Super Chats that have come through. Alex, real quick, let me jump through here and see.
I got to hear those names, guys. Where are my names? I haven't decided.
Yeah,
where are these outlaw name.
Yeah, where are these names for Alex in the Outlaw Nation? Come on.
I'm not satisfied.
Yeah, please satisfy Alex, my friends. Andrew Hale said, people seem to like Alex the Kid and Six Gun Shawshank. Six Gun Shawshank. Oh, ooh.
That's pretty cool.
I like that. I like that.
That's a tongue twister right there.
Shawshank. I like that. Let me see if anybody is, I haven't seen any other names. So people are just expressing their feelings for Fred Willard and for Lynn Shelton, and rightfully so. All right, gang, we're at 177 of y'all watching us live. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning to join us live, but we're at 126 likes. Let's get to 150 likes as soon as we can. Wrapping the show up in about half an hour or a little bit under. But so come and swing that cursor button over, hit that like button, give us some love here on the show. Quick Draw Shawshank is another one that Sean Baratow is mentioning. Let's see, Outlaw and the Kid. No,
I'm not the kid.
She's not the kid.
Also, I'm not a child. That sounds weird.
Don't you tell Alex. She's not a child. All right. Well, keep those things coming. She's a
30-year-old woman.
She's a full-on woman. She's married and everything. Come on, people.
I'm 30 years old, my dude. Come on now.
All right, let's move on to some casting news. You guys keep those names coming. Send them on Streamlabs. Send them on Super Chats. Keep those names coming. Give Alex some love here on the show. All right, some casting news we'll jump into now. Alex, Dakota Johnson, she has been cast in the new film from Olivia Wilde. Speaking of female directors, Olivia Wilde, who a lot of people enjoyed with her debut in Booksmart as a director, she's joining the film Don't Worry, Darling, which is a psychological thriller. We're getting this from Variety. Want to give some love to Variety there. And of course, the Timothy Olyphant news from The Hollywood Reporter. Sorry if I'm not giving full credit all through. I'm just trying to get to all the stories and get them all done. But yes, Variety giving us this this bit of news here. She will join Florence Pugh, Shia LaBeouf, and Chris Pine in this film. There's not a lot known about the movie's plot. It's set in an isolated utopian community in the 1950s California desert. Katie Silverman, who co-wrote Booksmart and penned the Netflix rom-com Set It Up, will write a new draft of the script. New Line is putting a lot of effort behind this one, considers it high priority. And of course, as I just mentioned, it's Shia LaBeouf and Dakota Johnson, who we recently saw in Peanut Butter Falcon. So two questions for you, Alex. One, did you like Booksmart? Are you excited for the next film from Olivia Wilde? And is Dakota Johnson getting involved in this cast?
I really do. I mean, like, who doesn't love Booksmart? Honestly, I would argue Booksmart should have been nominated for Best Picture of the Year But that's neither here or there. You know, Olivia Wilde, I've been really excited to see what her next big project will be, especially coming away from the success, you know, of Booksmart overall. But I'm really kind of curious about her pick of this project in particular. Like you mentioned, you know, with Katie Silverman and also the Carrie and Shane Van Dyke, you know, siblings, you know, they do a lot of like B horror movies and B thriller kind of things, you know, like Titanic 2, you know, like the Titanic. I mean, they do movies like that. Like,
yeah.
You know, Sharknado 24. And, you know, so when I heard that they were, I mean, like those two brothers were involved, I was like, but you know, knowing that Katie Silverman, you know, who is a co-writer, like you mentioned, you know, is involved, it gets me a little more excited, not to mention paired with Olivia Wilde, and they've collaborated not only on Booksmart, but she's also collaborated with Dakota Johnson on a few other movies as well. So, you know, that really does make me excited. Plus, you can't really attract a lineup of actors the way this movie did without having a very solid script. You know, I mean, we got Florence Pugh, Shia LaBeouf, Chris Pine, and now Dakota Johnson. So, you know, a lot of these actors are coming off hot off of you know, the award season. Obviously, Florence Pugh, you know, with Little Women, you know, Midsommar, Fighting With My Family, arguably that last year was her year. Chris Pine, to me, he's one of the, he's definitely a sleep, like a, he's definitely not, should not be sleeped on as a dramatic actor. He's fantastic. And also as a comedic actor, he's gold. you know, Shia LaBeouf coming off of Peter Butter Falcon, coming off Honey Boy, you know, these actors have their pick of the litter right now, and they decided to go with this little project, you know, that we know very little to nothing about. So it really makes me very excited.
I like it too. I mean, I enjoyed Booksmart. I didn't enjoy it as much as everybody else did, but I certainly did enjoy it. And I liked both Beanie Feldstein and Alex Marzonia's crush. I forget her. The other, Caitlin Dever. I really enjoyed their chemistry on the film, for sure. And of course, Billie Lord just stole every scene she was in. So much fun to see there. But certainly was a confident directorial debut from Olivia Wilde. So that speaks volumes to what you expect in a sophomore effort. Will this be as good as Booksmart? I feel like this could be like a Greta Gerwig situation where she was like, okay, I'm going to try this Lady Bird. It's kind of a smaller movie, but Little Women is more expansive. It's a longer movie. It's a bigger cast. It's a period piece. This feels like maybe Olivia Wilde is expanding what she's confident in doing. And so why not go a little bit stronger, go a little bit bigger, get bigger actors, see what you can do with them and how the experience is like directing them in a situation like this. I mean, you hear this 1950s, I get the Suburbicon vibe, which I did not like that movie. So hopefully this is more of an interesting psychological thriller that, you know, kind of explores more of the relationships, maybe even the gender dynamics at that time between men and women, maybe something like that as well will be interesting to see.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, I know you talked about Suburbicon, you know, which is like, it's not a great movie. I think it was directed by George Clooney, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay. Yes. Got it. but studying is working. You know, honestly, reading, like understanding the lineup and everything and understanding, you know, the plot a little bit, like the smidgen that we do have. Honestly, I got Carol vibes. I got
Revolution Road
vibes. And so, you know, where they are very focused on the unhappy housewife, you know, what she's like her involved, you know, in the community, you know, this not only just suburban life, but her relationship with other wives, you know, that's, I mean, that was a huge part of, you know, 50s culture that's not really talked about in movies all that much. Mm-hmm. So I'm really kind of curious to see how that's going to add. But not to mention these characters, I mean, these actors in particular, they're comfortable getting edgy. They're comfortable getting naked. You know, they're kind of comfortable with these, with these kind of situations when it comes to filmmaking. So I'm really kind of curious to see if any of that really kind of comes to play.
Yeah, I'd like that to make a comeback. I'd like actors to be comfortable being naked on screen again. It would be nice, as long as it fits the plot. One of the things that annoy me the most, Alex, is when you're watching a film that's rated R or a TV show that has shown nudity before, and all of a sudden someone like covers themselves up randomly. You're just like, that makes no sense. No, you don't do that after you've just had sex with somebody. I don't know. That's my personal opinion. Seeing a lot in House of Cards, I'm like, that just doesn't happen. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the casting news. Ben Rayner says, Bullseye Alex now. That's his another suggestion for you there.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
All right. Oh, Jason Clouchy trying to break kayfabe here. To be fair, Rocha isn't an actual outlaw. Oh, really? What clued you in there, Jason? What clued you in?
What?
let's see. The Shawshank Redemption.
That's not new. Come on. PLD.
No, D'Annunzio in the morning is not D'Annunzio at night. I think D'Annunzio in the morning is a little slower. D'Annunzio at night is sharper.
Well, he works at nighttime, essentially. Oh, so this is like his 1 a.m. essentially. Oh, he's usually sleeping at this time. He usually doesn't wake up until like 2 or 3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon or something.
Wow. I think he works overnight shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. He has a pretty important job. So.
Oh, really? What's his job?
I think he works as like a 911 dispatcher or something.
Okay.
I know he takes like emergency calls and a lot of important people, essentially. So, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Let's see. Andrew Hale descended in the Streamlab said, people seem to like Alex the Kid and Six Gun Shawshank. All right, Andrew. I saw that. Let's see. Jason Clouchy just sent one in and said, Ace High Alex. Where is that? Did I miss it? Oh, there it is.
Ace High
Alex.
I don't know if Jason, if I can trust you. I mean, did you just figure out about John not being an outlaw, but he is an outlaw?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's not the old West, so I can't really be technically an outlaw, but I don't really follow the rules a lot of the time. So in a way, I kind of am the outlaw. So
you can't be a cowboy or an outlaw if you live in a city. Come on now. That's the way it is. Well, it's science.
Yeah, PLD says he's a police, fire, EMS dispatcher, 911 call taker. Nice. I can see PLD. Ma'am, tell me what's happening with you right now. Tell me what's going on there. Okay. That's my imitation of PLD. All right, let's move on to some other casting news. And that's for Lord Miller. Lord Miller have been signed here to direct the latest film with Ryan Gosling. And guess what? Ryan Gosling did not learn from First Man, the underperforming box office of First Man. He did not learn about it. The lesson from it rather. And so he is going back into space. This is yet another film in space with Ryan Gosling, Lord Miller involved this time instead of Damien Chazelle. By the way, I loved First Man. I think it's a fantastic film. Should have totally been nominated for Best Picture. I don't understand people don't like that movie. It is technically one of the most beautiful films you're ever going to watch. And I dig the story that they told about Neil Armstrong. This is an adaptation of Andy Weir's next novel. Andy Weir, of course, the writer for The Martian. They got Amy Pascal as a producer in this thing, who people know she won the Oscar as a producer for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Sources say, this is coming again from The Hollywood Reporter, sources say that before Gosling had even finished reading the manuscript, he was lobbying to executives that it seemed like the perfect project for Lord and Miller. Universal and MGM had to kind of come to a deal on this because Universal had just signed Lord Miller to a first look deal. So Michael DeLuca and Donna Langley, Michael DeLuca being the MGM chief and Donna Langley being the Universal chairman, they worked this out. So now they are going to direct the movie over there at MGM. Weir's upcoming book is currently untitled, being referred to as Project Hail Mary, and is described as a solitary tale of an astronaut on a spaceship who is tasked with saving the planet. It is going to come out in 2021 from Random House. Alex, does this excite you at all? Are you a space person? Does Ryan Gosling get you into space? What's your thoughts on this? Or Lord Miller?
John, one of my favorite top 10 episodes.
Oh. Thank you.
It's actually just plugging that one. That's actually all a really right. fun Thank time you. With Nost. It's a fun time. But one of my favorite episodes was where you guys focused on set in space. So anything from Moon to 2001 Space Odyssey to Alien. So a lot of different directions. But when I remember listening to that, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of movies set in space that I really, really love. Oh, yeah. And reading this, I was actually reminded of that. Now, I completely agree when it comes to Ryan Gosling. Did he learn his lesson about First Man? You know, but at the same time, considering that the direction they're going in. Now, one of my big takeaways from this is not only Amy Pascal, you know, being involved, mm-hmm. you know, obviously Phil Lord and Chris Miller, you know, really wonderful when it comes to all things animation, fantastic, but also they plan on potentially expanding this into TV.
Right.
So my thought is, you know, there's going to be a huge animation aspect to this movie. So maybe there's going to be doing some psychedelic set in space situation, you know, that's going to be very focused on animation. And, you know, I mean, like looking at Into the Spider-Verse, obviously incredibly psychedelic and beautiful, bold yeah. colors. You know, I would really love to, you know, see how that would potentially come into play into an astronaut movie, not to mention, Adam Weir, is that his name?
Yeah, Adam Weir, yeah.
Yes, he's also a very funny writer. Yeah. You know, he does a lot of really wonderful sci-fi works, but there's always a real sense of, you know, dark comedy in yes. them as well. And he likes to make fun of himself, you know, his characters. So I'm really kind of curious to see, you know, Ryan Gosling pull out those, you know, comedic chops again.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a long while.
Yeah, I think, was the last time he was funny? I think it was like a little bit Crazy Stupid Love. There are funny yeah. moments with him in Crazy Stupid Love. I didn't laugh too much during La La Land. Yeah, less said about that, the better. But so I've seen him play, you know, funny stuff. He certainly has it. I mean, like going all the way back to Remember the Titans, he's kind of a goofy, funny guy, huh?
Not to mention The Nice Guys.
Oh, yeah, The Nice Guys. Yes.
Great. Like, yeah. Regardless of how you feel about that director, that's a whole thing of drama right there. But he is hilarious in The Nice Guys. He's able to really downplay, you know, him pull out this kind of really funny, low-key funny character, you know, yeah. really, really well. Because looking at him, you don't look at him and think, yeah, he's a bundle of laughs, obviously. Right. So any laugh that you do get from him is that much more funny.
Yeah, he's more of a subtle comedian than he is an overt comedian, right? And so it's about the material, and he knows how to play within the material and get the laughs and the jokes from within that. So yeah, great point. I'm just excited because I love Lord Miller. I still, if there was an alternate universe where I could go and watch Lord Miller solo, I would like to have seen what that film would have ended up being than the one we got. Not bashing the one we got. I think it's okay. But I think Lord Miller's might have been incredible because you judge the track record. When's the last time you didn't like a Lord Miller project? I mean, that's the thing. So we would have liked to have seen what their solo was like. But seeing him in space, maybe there's psychedelic stuff. Certainly there was a little bit of psychedelic stuff in Ad Astra with Brad Pitt. That was a weird trip and a half to watch as a movie. So maybe a little bit of that flows into this thing and the humor. The Martian, you know, remember Martian was nominated for a comedy in the Golden Globes. And people are like, what? This is a comedy? So certainly, as you said, Andy Weir has an ability to write comedy within his serious subject matter of his book. So we'll see how this one turns out. And the book hasn't even come out. It comes out next year. So they're yes. already, that's interesting to me. Do you write a novel and then pass it on? Or do you write a novel, then adapt it into a screenplay and pass it on? I'd like to find out. That's so interesting to me, you know, to find out how deep they are into it. Or do you do a treatment? Like, I don't know how that process works. What do you think, Alex? Do you know?
Yeah, we should just ask George R. Martin, you know, see how that's going. Yeah. Maybe he's getting some pointers.
I'm not asking that fool anything. But,
yeah, it is kind of weird. The book is also not set to be published officially until early next year, next yeah. spring, specifically by Random House. And so it's really, I don't want to say suspicious that he is trying, he's pitching it. Mm. He's pitching it like as a potential television script, you know, a television idea, you know, before the book is potentially even completed. I mean, yeah. like, it's really fishy, you know, but at the same time, you know, I'm not so much attracted to the idea of, you know, Adam Weir. I'm more attracted to the directors, Amy Pascal. I think Pascal is very underrated as a producer, as a creator, because not only is she, a lot of people talk about her almost exclusively in terms of Spider-Man, but yeah. she's behind, you know, Little Women. Mm-hmm. Most recently, Little Women. She was also behind, you know, The Post, you know, yes. with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. So she has a lot of dramatic chops as well as and comedic chops as well, you know, sure. as a creator, you know, not just, you know, a lot of these animated films. So
yeah, agreed. Great points, Alex. Absolutely. Listen, we've got over 200 of you all watching us live now. Thank you so much. Please swing that cursor button over. We're past 150 likes. Let's see if we can get to 200 likes before we wrap this thing up here in the next 10 minutes. We'd love it if you gave it some love there and that. And please keep sending your Streamlabs in, your Super Chats in. We're going to try to answer them. We got one more topic to talk about, but here's a little Super Chat from Andrew Hale. Hannah is going to need a 911 call after that fire promo from PLD. Runner-ups for names, Gunslinger Alex Mack, Six Gun Shashek. So that is where people seem to be running. I saw someone put the Outlaw and the Gunslinger. That's not bad. I kind of like that. It's a little bit simple, but I don't. We'll see. Alex is, she's the last word on this thing. So I'm going to let her, she's going to decide for herself, obviously, what she's comfortable with. But yeah.
I'm not going to lie. At this time, Six Gun Shashek is my favorite.
Okay. Six Gun Shashek. I like it. You'd also dropped the fire promo at Hannah's expense. Any quick thing you want to say about that?
No. Hannah. He doesn't deserve any more recognition words. It's whatever.
It's hard to burn anything down when you play like a box of wet matches. All right, let's move on. Let's see. We had no more Streamlabs, no more Super Chats. Let's get into our last story. Alex, please take us there.
Okay, guys. So, there's a story. Okay, Percy Jackson's being made into a TV show. Boom! For Disney Plus. Boom! Oh my gosh. Okay, so what makes this pretty amazing? Not only, is there was two movies that came out. Okay, so, obviously there was The Lightning Thief that came out in 2010, but as well as The Sea of Monsters that came out in 2013. Now, these movies in particular are not considered huge box office successes. They made about, the first one made $226 mm-hmm. million. The second one made just over $200 million, but their budgets were $95. Now, these are considered more international movies, kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean or Transformers, which I know you love. Now, these movies are known to do very well internationally rather than domestically. Now, that being said, going into this show, I honestly feel like this is actually a play for really getting a lot of international audiences. Because, I feel like every kid, at least I know I did, goes through like a mythology phase. Yep. And not to mention, these books are still hugely popular, all of them. Now, there are five books in total by Rick Riordan.
Riordan. Yeah.
Yes. But there's a lot of that kind of really focus on these demigods. Kids, essentially. They're in their teens or early teens, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of different directions you can take this. Very popular book, but you can really kind of go into their adventures at Camp Half-Blood. You can go into their adventures trying to get Zeus's lightning bolt or, fighting Titans. There's a lot of different directions, that you can really kind of go into with these kind of coming of age mythology based show. And I do feel like, considering they're doing a whole revamp, I don't think they're going to stick with any of the original actors or anything as well. Also, all the actors are now like 35 years old. So we don't want another Grease situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see this kind of come out, though. What do you think?
I am, too, because I always felt these films were kind of underwhelming because I like Logan Lerman is a fantastic actor. And I think people sleep on Alexandra Daddario all the time. You can absolutely like discount her as, she's attractive or she did that film with Kate Upton, which was like painful to watch, but she is always good in everything she works on. She's good at the comedy. She's good at the awkward sexual situations that she's in some of these comedies. She's good at playing the harder stuff like she did in first season of True Detective in that couple of episodes that she had. Alexandra Daddario is someone that I really enjoyed. So I felt that the material in both of these films for Logan and Alexandria, and I can't remember that actor's name who was in Tropic Thunder. He's the other one that was the part of the trio as well.
But I didn't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, something Jackson, I think. Really undercut their ability, the ability for them to be shown at the top of their game. And so to hear that they're doing it again for Disney Plus, this makes all the sense in the world. Look, the original books, the kid is 12 years old. The main kid is 12 years old when he first discovers that he's the half son of Zeus and or Poseidon rather, and has to go and do and discover and, you know, find all these characters and go on his journeys. And I think it's 5 books this series. So there's a lot to explore here, and it's smart. Look, the Disney Plus, they're doing this with National Treasure as well. They're going to make a National Treasure series, but they want it to focus on younger people. So this is logically the turning of the tide in that all these projects are now starting to be focused for the younger demographic. Disney Plus understands those are the people that are watching their content at higher levels. So they want to create content for those people to keep subscribing and enjoying their service there on Disney Plus. So National Treasure for teenagers, Percy Jackson for the 12 to 13 to 14 year old cast there, moving and then being with them for 5 movies or 5 seasons or whatever as the series goes along. It makes all the sense in the world financially, because you get them young. They're not going to, you know, come at you for more money. You get them young and lock them into a contract. Then down the road, you can negotiate something. But initially, at least, you're saving money on the situation. So to me, this makes all the sense in the world financially and as a business. But also rebooting this with maybe better creators, maybe people who understand the material a little bit better and can bring out what people love about the books on screen, I think is a great idea as well, to give it another chance. Certainly a franchise that deserves a reboot or a reimagining, in my opinion.
Absolutely. It just comes down to the books deserve better. I know we talk about that a lot you know, I feel like in this community where it's like, oh, the book was better. Like obviously 95% of the time the book is better, you know, especially in these cases, you know, but I mean, you can really go in a lot of different directions with these characters. Like you said, they're like pre-teens, early teens. Right. And so you can really start them young, and you can go a lot of these like shenanigan, you know, adventures, which is really, really fun. And, you know, not to mention, like I said, they kind of discover at a point, they're hitting puberty. They're also hitting the point where they're discovering their powers. Yes. They're discovering their ancestry. I mean, he's a son of a human and Zeus. I mean, Percy. I mean, like, no pressure, kid. one of the girls, you know, she's the daughter of Athena. You know, again, there's a lot of aspects to, you know, our, you know, any regular upbringing that, you know, a lot of people can really kind of take from these situations. Now, again, since we are going to be, I assume they are definitely going to be recasting and everything, focusing on the younger audience. Are there any actors, actresses you would love to see in any of these roles?
Oh, that's a great question. I really don't know offhand. Kiernan Shipka, although she's a little bit too old, I guess, to slide in off of Mad Men, and of course her great work in Sabrina, why would she step down to what you could argue is a little bit of a semi-secondary role in Percy Jackson? So right now, I don't know. I'm not as in tune with the 12 to 14-year-olds working right now, but certainly we've seen a explosion of younger actors over the last few years who have come on to projects and been just a really incredible in them. Who's the girl from The Safe Child or the Chris Evans film that he did? I like her as well, the young actress from that. Let me look that up real quick. But do you have some ideas in your head?
I do have a few ideas. Okay. Now, I don't know a lot of male actors right out the gate, you know, that are at it. Like you said, I mean, like, we're not watching Disney Channel, you know, like, you know, the Disney Channel movies or anything really all that much, unfortunately. Right, right. But, you know, some actors I would love to see, you know, be involved. You know, actually, I was going through and I was like, hey, there's a lot of Game of Thrones actors in here, my list. Natalie Dormer.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see her involved. She does not get enough recognition. She is so wonderful. She is so brilliant in everything she's in. Oh. She's actually recently in Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. So I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to play out. I would love to see her play, you know, Percy's mom, maybe Athena. You know, I could definitely see that happen. Tati Gabrielle. Yeah. You know, I think you and I were actually on the same similar wavelength. She actually played Prudence from what I feel like the real star of Sabrina. Right. You know, I thought she was wonderful. I would love to see her in that. But also Pedro Pascal. I mean, can you not? I mean, I can totally see him as Poseidon or Hades. I mean, I
see that. Why not, man? I'm never against a Latino being a big part of a show. So yeah, I like that idea too.
I can definitely see him being a sarcastic, you know, Hades, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, you know, I mean, come on, let's make it happen.
I like that idea.
Yeah. So I would, you know, I can't wait to see this really, when we start getting some casting, you know, really, really come forward. Not only that, I'm really kind of curious to see, you know, like you said, you know, with the Mandalorian and everything, I'm kind of curious to see that if Disney Plus is able to attract such really wonderful directors from the Mandalorian, like you said, Robert Rodriguez, Peyton Reed earlier, if we can get Jon Favreau, I would love to see if that would translate to other, Disney Plus TV shows, you know, if we can get any directors on that level, really hop on possibly to this show, because again, this show has so much potential to be wonderful.
Yeah.
And I would, if Disney maintains that really great relationship with its directors, I would love to see it translate to this show.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. That's great. Those are great points you bring up. Oh my God. That'd be great. Are you kidding? Please. That'd be fantastic. Yes. Some people have mentioned, I mean, sorry, some actors we could look at. Jack Dylan Grazer is interesting as a choice. I like McKenna Grace is the actress I was thinking about from Gifted. McKenna Grace could be interesting as well. I like the idea. I like the idea of Jacob Tremblay. I know he's in Room and got nominated, but could be an interesting series. Yeah, he did Good Boys. Yeah. So it's not like he's above doing that kind of stuff. So he could be an interesting choice as well as the lead. But I think they're probably looking for a geeky smoldering type, you know, that's going to get people to watch, but also the young girls to be interested or attracted to him, I imagine.
I have an idea. Okay. What do you think? Have you seen Honey Boy?
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah.
So he is actually at that perfect age right now. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up auditioning or somehow, you know, doing it, because again, coming up hot off of like one of the best performances of the year in Honey Boy. And he wasn't talked about enough, but you definitely know he had some really great conversations with some producers or whatever it might be, casting directors, whatever it might be after.
Yeah.
So I'll see that kind of happen, but you know, he's a good looking kid. He is actually 13 years old. So that is perfect. And you know, yeah, so he's just starting to get recognition right now, and he's a good-looking kid.
Yep, absolutely. No, right. Come on now. Give her some love. Noah Jupe, that's the actor's name. We have reached the end of the show. I got to do SCN live. So Kristen wants to touch base with me about doing it on Zoom. So we got to jump off here. But thank you. This flew by so fast, Alex. I'm so glad that you were aboard. This was a lot of fun. I look forward to many, many shows, enjoying our chemistry as it builds, as it gets stronger, and as we both get more comfortable with each other, and fans themselves enjoying what we're bringing to the table as well. Please let everybody know what you're up to, what you're doing, plug whatever you want here in the last couple of minutes.
That's my Twitter right there. That'd be cool if you gave me a follow. That'd be awesome. I also am part of Called Action Crew, so definitely give us a follow over there. I host Schmobates. I'm part of Cinema Bias every Tuesday. Tomorrow we're going to dive into Pulp Fiction because I still haven't seen that movie before. And I'm terrified because I don't want it. But we're going to dive into Pulp Fiction tomorrow on Video Drew's page, and also Schmobates, you know, we're doing a winner's bracket tournament, which, you know, John Rocha, unfortunately, he lost. So
it was, you know, Bibiani called his friends. But what can you say? Bibiani called his friends to vote for him. What can I say?
Very arguable for sure. But yeah, definitely check us out. Check us out with Called Action, pretty much.
There you go. Guys, listen, first of all, I want to thank Alex for coming aboard the Outlaw Nation. I know she's an Action Army person. Further building the bridge here between the Outlaw Nation and the Action Army, but also because I respect her opinions. I respect her points of views. I think she's so into this stuff as well. It's been a blast to be able to have this first show, and already it was seamless as hell between both of us. So I look forward to many more shows. So thank you, Alex, for being a part of the Outlaw Nation here and a part of Mornings with the Outlaw. Please follow her. Give her 1,000. Look, she's at 240, 230, something like that. Guys, if you're watching right now and you haven't followed Alex, go follow Alex. Get over 1,000 by the end of the week if we can, if not earlier. Get over 1,000 subscribers to her Twitter there, or followers to her Twitter there. She is not on Instagram. I think we got to correct that with Jake, right? You're not on Instagram?
I am on Instagram, but work stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So you are Real Alex Max on the Instagram as well.
Oh, on Instagram, I am. I don't remember.
Okay.
I do on Instagram. I'm not going to lie.
All right. Well, watch it. What's that?
There I am. I am Mac Midori. There I am.
Yeah, Mac Midori. Okay, so we'll have Jake adjust that graphics going forward starting Wednesday. So there you go. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching this episode of Mornings with the Outlaw. Can't thank you all enough for being a part of the Outlaw Nation. Please hit that subscribe button below if you haven't subscribed yet. You know, we're marching towards 15,000 subscribers, trying to get to 20,000 subscribers as quickly as possible. We'd appreciate all your love and help. And please like and share the show on your social media, because if you like it and you share it, you're telling your friends, your family members, everyone who follows you that you approve of this show, and it will give them a chance to take a chance on this show, and maybe they come aboard the Outlaw Nation as well. And speaking of coming aboard the Outlaw Nation, please don't forget that Patreon there, www.patreon.com/John Rocha. See all the new shows that we got going on the Patreon. There's the graphic again. All those four shows starting the first week of June. Every Friday will be one episode of one of those shows will drop. So like the first week will be Criterion Corner. Second week will be The Outpost. Third week, OK Corral. Fourth week, Outlaw Rides again. And then we repeat. We start all over. Another Criterion Corner. So that's how it's going to work there. And of course, the two hangouts that go on. And let me put up the other graphic there. And the two, of course, the watch-alongs that will go along randomly on movie commentary watch-alongs that I'll be doing as well. So come get involved. And of course, go to the Outlaw Nation Discord as well. And Twitch, the Outlaw Nation, all one word, all together. All right, that's it for me. Follow me down below. We got to go. And tune into us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of Mornings with the Outlaw. Take care until then.
Au revoir.